A potential new front opening in the trade war is a veiled threat over rare earth metals.
Beijing considering cutting exports of the commodities.
To national defense and
China
economic
did
security.
Cut off the supply to
supply
Japan.
Chain is very important
China could
for
use
GDP,
rare earths.
For national...
Rare earth elements mining is a big story today. But beyond the geopolitical headlines, rare earths is an environmental story.
What you just heard is an audio clip of one of the protests around rare earth mining in Guangxi. Chalco, which is the only company conducting rare earth mining in Guangxi, had been mining there through their subsidiary, Guangxi Nonferrous Rare Earth Development Co. Ltd. since 2011. But the story we're interested in started in 2017 when they began mining activities. Michelle, do you want to tell us a little more about that?
Sure. So the project was not welcomed by local villagers. This was partially due to the fact that it was set to occur very close to their main water source, and they were worried about that being polluted. So there were multiple protests organized by villagers against the mining project in 2018. And in fact, there were several clashes with police. And by June 2018, Chalco had been ordered to halt mining in the area after inspectors identified an environmental breach resulting in water contamination. And this isn't the end of the story, because Chalco did eventually resume their mining operations. But in September of 2020, a warning was issued by the Ministry of Ecology and Environment after their inspectors found that they had been not only polluting water sources, but also covering up their pollution in various parts of Guangxi province, and mining was again halted. So while this case in Guangxi is certainly striking, it's only one incident in the greater landscape of Chinese rare earth elements mining and not representative of all cases. Protests might be attention-grabbing, but most mining disputes actually get litigated, and it's important to recontextualize this incident within that greater narrative. Celine, would you be able to speak to this?
Sure. We typically think of the Chinese government or the Communist Party as an overpowering institution that has sole control over every single policy, even on the local level. That is not necessarily an accurate picture. The Chinese bureaucracy is a complicated organ with a central state at the national level outlining directives to provincial government and more local levels, which oftentimes have a lot of wiggle room to implement policies according to their local needs. An interesting way to look at recent regulations in the environmental realm is not only about emphasizing environmental protection from the central level. Behind this increased attention from the central government, we see an interesting dynamic of how the central government controls and pressures local level officials.
This is President Xi Jinping restating his famous phrase, "Green mountains and clear waters are equal to gold and silver," at a high-level party convention in 2015.
Yeah, so back in the 1950s when rare earth mining first started, the SOEs were the sole actors in the industry. And these private companies began to came in only as China was opening up. An important trend recently has been industrial consolidation, in which essentially the SOEs are buying up these private companies, as well as an increase in regulation. So what we see here is that in the commercial sphere, power is kind of reshuffled back to the state, and that changes the ways in which local and central officials are now cooperating to regulate rare earth mining. Celine can tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so there are a couple things that really indicated this reshuffling of power back to the central state as its implications. First, an overall centralization of power from local officials to the central state after Xi Jinping came to power was a very obvious trend. President Xi's emphasis on ecological civilization, a central tenet of Xi Jinping thought, has put a lot of pressure on local officials to crack down on environmental malpractices. The central government sets GDP growth goals for provincial governments for years. Now, specific goals and criteria also exist in the realm of environmental protections. An example that illustrates this relationship between the central and provincial government is when the state council demanded Jiangxi province to roll out the construction of green mine in a guiding opinions, which is a document issued by the state council. In response to the opinion, the provincial level officials composed a series of guiding opinions for green mining and evaluative standards for mining enterprises, which will then guide specific implementation and further policymaking at the city and district level. Another example that shows you this dynamic between the central and local officials is in 2019, national legislators passed China's first resource tax law. All rare earth included, of course. Only a couple items such as crude oil have fixed tax rates and others have floating tax rates. Provincial level governments actually get to decide the rate, which also needs to be approved by the provincial legislature within a legal range after assessing the environmental impact of specific projects. This shows you that even though that the central government is putting a lot of pressure on the local government, the central government is still very aware that it needs to give provincial officials enough space to accommodate local needs.
In terms of this regulation that you're talking about, do you know what are the specific issues that these new regulations were seeking to address?
Yeah, sure. A major issue is illegal mining.
The gray miners are small-scale miners who didn't have a permit and who didn't abide by the general guiding principles to maximize the life of the mine. These illegal miners existed in a gray area because a lot of their harvests would end up being purchased by legally registered product companies at the end.
Scholars have estimated that these gray businesses have at times occupied 40% of China's rare earth mining industry. In the past decade, China had busted a slew of mid to large scale illegal mining businesses, but it wasn't until around 2012 that China started to seriously tackle these gray miners whose existence filled the vacuum left by the difference between what downstream production demanded and what official quota allowed. These gray miners use cash for transactions and went off record, selling all the way through the domestic supply chain from small miners to licensed large producers. A large part of the regulations really focused on cracking down on these illegal miners.
So, Celine, what are some consequences that we've seen of this illegal mining?
Yeah, so illegal minings are problematic because for the environment and the market, the transiency of legal and careless mining practices can cause mine sterilization, which happens when the miners only extract ores with high concentration of rare earth when they were supposed to extract both higher and medium to low grade ores to extend the life of the mine. Green miners also competed with licensed companies and drove down prices that could also reduce interest in profit-driven rare earth recycling businesses.
How is the Chinese government tackling these illegal miners?
Yeah, we've sort of touched upon this. I mean, sporadic crackdowns on illegal mining has been going on for more than a decade, but these police raids weren't enough to change the entire landscape that were filled with these small businesses. And systematic reform of the industrial landscape began in 2012 when the central state issued a white paper detailing the current status as well as the future outlook of regulating the rare earth mining industry. In the white paper, the state council called for a top-down integration of mining and processing companies. This led to the six consolidated state-owned enterprises that currently dominate the rare earth market in China. There's an interesting connection to the campaign that was started in 2017 against sort of like a mafia groups in rural China. Illegal mining very often involves what we call like organized crime groups in rural China. These are like by no means ordinary organized crime, but like they're like local or regional bosses who dominate a region or field. And these bosses put personal authority in place of laws and fair market competition, and thus coercively disrupt market and social order. And so around 2018, China's highest national agencies launched a three-year campaign called Special Criminal Syndicate Combat, which targets these organized crime groups. There are two implications I would say to this campaign. First is that there is definitely a more intense and focused crackdown on illegal mining. On the second, perhaps this is like mostly speculation, but a deeper reason for this campaign is how emphasizing the criminality involved in mining can be a way to for the central state to legitimize top-down crackdown at local levels.
So that's really interesting. I'm kind of wondering what is common and what is different between these regions in which mining is occurring.
I can only really speak to this topic very broadly, so I'm just going to lump Guangxi in with basically all of the southern provinces in China where rare earth element mining occurs, as opposed to Inner Mongolia. And the most obvious difference is Inner Mongolia is geographically isolated and sparsely populated, while the southern provinces are more densely populated and mines are often in close proximity to local communities. And the environment in the southern provinces is comparatively lush. What this means is that any environmental damage is much more obvious due to the proximity to local communities, as well as the different characteristics of the environment.
So I guess another interesting thing that we want to bring in is, why did China come to dominate the rare earths industry in the first place?
Well, I think this is a fascinating question because China currently has, if I'm not mistaken, 1/3 of the rare earth reserve, but it pretty much dominates 80-90% of the entire market. Not only does China produce the majority of the crude mining resource, but also dominates the supply chain from taking them out from the ground to extraction, plus processing, to using these refined REEs to produce magnets, batteries, etc. And even now with the U.S. ramping up its REE mining, the majority of what and mines is actually shipped to China for further processing. And I was wondering, Michelle, like, do we have any other reasons than just like, you know, China has these resources? Do we have any like interesting historical narratives or anecdotes that can really explain China's role in this industry today?
I feel like the main narrative in the West in regards to how China came to dominate the rare earth metals mining industry is that it was willing to tolerate the inevitable environmental pollution and destruction associated with the process of mining and refining rare earths, where nations in the West could not. But I think that this ignores the fact that there are many processes carried out by Western nations today that are also incredibly polluting, such as oil sands extraction and refinement. And in light of this, I think that this wasn't an issue of just the environment, but instead of both economics and environment acting in tandem.
So we were actually able to find some facts about Xu Guangxian, who is known as father of the Chinese rare earth industry, for researching a chemical extraction process that became the foundation of how rare earths are mined today. And because he never patented his process, the process itself was able to be used indiscriminately by any state-owned mining companies. A very patriotic man. Because of the availability of this extraction process, China was able to meet the demand for rare earth elements.
In an interview with Professor Wen Saizhang, an assistant professor of mining and minerals engineering at Virginia Tech, he provided some further insight into some of the circumstances of the United States lagging so far behind China in rare earth element production.
You know that rare earth normally comes with radioactive elements, thorium. So because of the existence of thorium, and it is very difficult to separate the thorium from rare earth. And also another issue is the market price. So rare earth actually is the most abundant in China. And the processing cost is lower actually to generate rare earth in China. So there is no market price for the rare earth in California.
Mountain Pass Mine in the Mojave Desert, California, was once a major source of rare earth to the world market and the only mine in the U.S. In 2015, it was shut down. Professor John says it was shut down because of its impact on the environment and its inability to compete with China. Now let's talk about recent trends. One thing we've discussed is definitely an increase in environmental regulation as different levels of the Chinese bureaucracy responds to President Xi's call for an ecological civilization.
What's interesting about these environmental restrictions is that they also touch upon market regulations, as the central government set out to sweep away local bosses that have been disrupting the market. Here we see how environmental protection is really a standalone concern for the central state. Rather, it could be invoked by the central state to strengthen its regulation of the industry at large. Another trend that I'm seeing right now is that the Chinese state perceives the environmental as well as the human cost that could potentially be involved in rare earth mining. Thus, we are seeing an increased emphasis on the so-called low-impact mining.
Professor Zhang also filled us in on some aspects of the mining process that low-impact mining deals with, such as backfilling and tailings dams. Backfilling is essentially the process where you take the dirt, basically, that you took from the ground in the mining process that all the rare earths has already been removed from and put it back in the ground where it was taken from to preserve the original level of the ground. And tailings dams are the reservoirs where you keep the chemicals and other waste produced during the purification process and are a major issue in terms of the environmental impact of rare earth element mining, but methods have been developed to reduce their impact to some extent. And although it's important to talk about the ways in which mining can be made more environmentally friendly, it's also important to consider that this is not the only way in which we can protect the environment. Professor Zhang also spoke about secondary sources of rare earth mining, such as recycling from used electronics.
Secondary resources means the resources that contain rare earth but have not been used yet. For example, coal flakes and electronic waste, all of these belong to secondary resources. Recycling is from electronic waste. You can also recover it from other resources, such as coal refuse, coal-related materials, such as coal combustion ash.
So looking at this whole landscape, the state is considering environmental costs and strategically invoking environmental needs in order to achieve specific political goals. And this is really significant because since China dominates the industry to such an extent, whatever is happening there is the global paradigm. I mean, I guess we do really want to just go straight up and promote socialism in this podcast. But regardless of what we are doing with that, the existence of this model and the extent to which it has been successful is just something that's really, really important. Rare earths aren't going away anytime soon, so to be continued. Thank you for listening.